Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and today I'm going to talk about the March for Our Lives. And I just had some technical problems, so let me get my guests on. I'll be back with you guys in just a second.
This is Jackson.
Lynn, hi. I was having technical problems. Let me get my friend Jason on the phone. So, Lynn,
okay.
You took part in the March for Our Lives this afternoon, right?
Oh, yes. This morning, yeah.
You loved it?
That was
okay,
wonderful.
I'll be with you. I'll be with you in just a second. So, while I'm getting Jason on the phone, tell us a little bit about your experience.
There were many, 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 many people there, thousands and thousands of people. The rally was held at 10 o'clock this morning in Capitol West Park, and the park was pretty much full.
Hi, Jason. I'm sorry. I was having technical problems. My friend Lynn is on the phone, and she's describing her thoughts on the march today. So let's hear what she's got to say real quick.
The rally went on for about an hour and a half. There were just thousands of people. There were young students, and there were older people. There were people from everywhere. They had extremely innovative signs. People very carefully listened to all the speakers. The speakers were excellent. I can go through who some of the speakers were. The speakers made presentations that were so moving, I wanted to cry. It was an amazing and powerful moment. And the students that organized this, because this rally was organized by students, was just amazing. So you can let me know how much more detail you'd like about the speakers and what they talked about. I have I took some notes because the speakers were so good.
Jason? As a high school teacher, what were your thoughts?
I thought, well, first of all, the description of all the speakers is spot on. There was one speaker in particular that blew me away, but without even going into the details yet of which speaker that was, every speaker was amazing and spoke a truth that needs to be heard around the country. With regards to being a teacher and bringing that point of view, you always want your students to grow into amazing citizens, amazing adults, and this rally really showed the best of that. It showed that students really aren't people to just cast their opinions aside. They are full of logic and reason and emotion and are ready to be citizens. There was a great quote at one point that said, I'm going to misquote it a little bit, but the essence is there, how the children need to behave like the adults because the adults are behaving like children by not having action, you know, tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. And I mean, it was so well done. It's what you want as a teacher. It's what you want all your students to grow up into.
I'm sorry, I didn't even introduce you. Jason Mutford, who's a high school teacher, and my friend Lynn Jackson, who's been an activist for years. And Lynn, let me ask you this question. We've been involved in many issues, you know, throughout our adult lives. And the fact that young people put this together when there was so much throughout the years that were, you know, not demonstrated against the four? Or are you surprised by the fact that young people orchestrated this whole thing?
Well, I think that one of the speakers was quite amazing. She was one of the students, one of the student organizers. And she said that anyone of any age can do something. And she says, look, I don't even have a driver's license, and I organized this rally. She was amazing. But I think at this moment in time is very different from other times when we've, you know, had these horrible mass shootings. Because in Parkland, at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School, the students know each other. They are a community, and they are together. It's not like, say, in Las Vegas, where the victims didn't know each other. This people live together. This is a community. And the name of the school, I believe, is significant. It's Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, who was born in 1890, died in 1998 at the age of 108. And she became an activist, and she was an activist throughout her life. And when she was 79, she became an activist to save the Everglades. And I think the significance is that this school was named after her while she was still alive, which means that that community cares about this kind of activism. So I think that we have the coming together of all these factors where the students know each other. They come from a community that clearly knows what's right and wrong. And I think that maybe that this time it's going to change because these students are serious.
You know, and I watch, being a news junkie, I watch, you know, the president's speeches and stuff. And I remember time after time, Obama would give a speech and he would have tears in his eyes, and then next day, the day after that, nothing was ever done. And to me, the prime example is Sandy Hook, where there were so many young children that were murdered, and still nothing was done then. Jason, what do you think made the difference?
I think Lynn hit it right on the head that they, if they're raised in a community that is action-minded, that is focused on making the world a better place, and especially, you know, they're not alone in wanting to change something. They have each other. They support each other. I saw a clip of a documentary in which they were organizing, the students at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas were organizing who's going to go to which city to say which talking points. They are seriously not alone as their own group. And now they literally have hundreds of thousands of people marching with them. They're definitely not alone. That's what makes this so different.
Now, Lynn, you and I come from the same generation, and we came from the anti-war demonstration. And I remember reading about how unnerved Nixon was and seeing all of this stuff go on. And then all of a sudden there was like nothing ever done. No people demonstrated, no people spoke out. And then all of a sudden they were speaking out. Do you think this is going to propel not only younger people, but people of our generation who became silent, who will now speak out against injustices in this country?
Yeah, I think this subject has, it really tears at people's hearts. I went to the demonstration this morning with a friend who hasn't demonstrated since Vietnam, and I thought it was very significant that it was this morning that he came out for the first time in decades to protest for this particular issue. I think that we have a lot of serious problems in this country right now, but the idea that children who go to school have to worry about being shot, I think just shows what the it's a moral issue. It's like, how can we have this in our country? And I really think that this time is different. After Sandy Hook, I thought everything was going to change. But the difference is they were only 6 years old. Those children were little kids. And they, even though they suffered this horrible slaughter, they were too young to come together to protest. Their parents protested a great deal. But it wasn't quite the same thing. These students at Parkland are old enough. They know right from wrong. And they know that it's wrong that they have to have active shooter drills at their school. They know that that is morally wrong. And I think they are going to lead us and that they're going to go vote. They're all going to, as soon as they turn 18, they're not going to throw away their right to vote. They're going to vote, and they're going to vote these people out of office who won't protect them going to school.
How do you feel about that, Jason?
I 100% agree with that. If I recall correctly, it was Paul Tonko, Congressman Paul Tonko, talked about how this is a new generation. He said there's a Vietnam generation, there's a civil rights generation, and this is the start of the next generation in politics. Absolutely true. They're not going anywhere. I would not be surprised to see some of them not just campaign to get certain people out of office. I expect a lot of those students to actually step up and run for office. I predict. Because it really seems like they're not going to let this go. They want to see this change for real this time. Enough really is enough. So I think they are definitely this is definitely a turning point in American history. We're going to be reading about this in history books 20 years looking back.
Oh, I totally agree. I think you're right.
I've got a question for you, both of you. The NRA has been a powerful force, not only, in Congress, but on state level. I remember when I ran for the New York State Assembly, back in 1984, I got a questionnaire from the NRA, which I thought, why should I even bother to fill it out? That's not a national issue. But then since I didn't fill it out, they sent a flyer to every home in my district that I was against the NRA. So my question to both of you is, given the fact that they have been a powerful force for many years, a lot of the people that marched today were vocal today, were not yet of voting age. Do you think the NRA will just blow them off and continue to operate the same way as they always have? What do you think, Jason?
I think the sheer number of people that coordinated marches throughout the entire country, there's no way the NRA is just going to forget that this happened. They might wish to forget it happened, but they're moving forward. Their strategy to keep themselves important honestly, they are a political entity. They have to add into their calculus how to handle today's movement, and they're not going to write these children off, because these children really are weeks, months, and only a year or so away from voting age. And when I looked out across the crowd, it wasn't just high schoolers. This actually brought in a lot of people, like Lynn said, somebody who hadn't protested since Vietnam. The NRA has to actually account for the fallout from this situation.
Lynn?
No, I agree with your analysis. I also think the NRA is going to be toast after this. I think that One thing I was very struck with is Assemblyman Phil Steck gave quite an explanation about the Second Amendment. He was amazing. And the thing that he talked about is that until fairly recently, he read the Second Amendment, which of course includes the phrase, with a well-regulated militia. And he said, it's not a militia if you go out and you shoot people. This is crazy. And he explained what a militia was using an example from the Roman Empire. And he brought through the history of the Second Amendment and the use of guns. And he also told a story that I was not aware of, that in Albany County, where obviously the city of Albany is, the Albany County legislator Doug Bullock introduced legislation that would have limited the amount of ammunition you could have. And, I mean, this is just Albany County. It's not a particularly big place. And the NRA so swamped the meeting that they took the vote at that it lost. Even in very liberal Democratic Albany, that law lost. And that just shows what the power of the NRA is. However, I think that they cannot overcome this student movement. They will not prevail in the end. Because in the end, it's morally wrong to have children shot at school.
I would like to piggyback something off.
Go ahead.
If I can piggyback off of that, my deepest concern is that the NRA is already well invested in choosing language to have, political campaigns, whether they're smearing someone who is campaigning or they're just trying to influence how people think about gun issues. And there are researchers and authors. There's a particular linguist, George Lakoff, who wrote a book called The Metaphors We Live By, who has been involved in crafting language. And so one of the advantages I see the NRA as having, why they won't be as as toast as we'd like them to be, perhaps, is that they're going to campaign back and say just the right thing. They're going to spin each phrase just right. And honestly, the average person in hearing both sides of the argument, for and against gun rights, doesn't realize how professionally crafted the NRA language is actually developed. I mean, they're hiring world-class linguist experts to tell them, well, would you like to say it this way or would you like to say it that way? And they're gonna take their data set and they're going to take what they know about language and they're going to pivot every single talking point to their own advantage. That's what people are up against who, the NRA really, really gets into our thinking in a subconscious way. And that's, and it's not just the NRA. We all have to be very aware of the language that we hear and question the assumptions we make when we hear those words. So I think it's going to be a harder battle than, they're not as toast as we think.
Well, they may not be toast yet, but listening to the speakers today who were just mostly regular people, either student organizers, there was the president of a local teachers association. I mean, there were different people, but listening to those messages, those were beautiful messages. There wasn't when Lisa Good, who's a local anti-gun activist here in Albany, when she spoke, it was so powerful. And she spoke about her experiences working with gun victims and gun violence victims and all those kinds of things. And she was amazing. And at one point it became overwhelming and she stopped speaking because she was crying. And I think everybody in that crowd was crying because her message was so powerful. And I think the more we listen to these regular people explaining, talking about, telling their story about their experiences with gun violence and the moral issue of allowing children to be shot at school so that somebody can have an automatic weapon I think is simply going to overpower the NRA, and that perhaps the people who took over the NRA, who are not hunters, they're people, they're very right wing, and they think that everyone ought to have a assault weapon in their closet, that those people may eventually be booted out of the NRA, and the NRA will go back to being what it used to be, which is an organization that promoted gun safety and issues for hunters. Maybe I'm an optimist, but I think it's going to happen.
I hope so. I mean, yeah, go ahead.
I lost my train of thought. Go ahead, Jason. I'll think of the question in a second.
I think that the speeches that were delivered today, while they were not professionally developed by a linguist, the way I'm suggesting the NRA usually puts out their talking points, Lynn, I think you're correct. Some of those speeches were, actually all of those speeches were powerful, but some of them really were at that next level. The one that really most impressed me was, I hope I caught the name correctly, Lydia Martell from Bethlehem. She preceded Paul Tonko, and she,
yes,
her rhetoric was amazing. She kept hitting sentence after sentence. I'm tired of this. I'm tired of the next thing and the next thing. And the way she constructed that speech, that speech was world class. That is, it was better than the professional elected members of various legislative bodies who mostly spoke off the cuff. Her speech, we need more of that, because that's the level of speech and rhetoric that's going to stick with us, not just consciously, but subconsciously. And I hope they can continue to – yeah, go ahead.
I watched it on TV because I didn't want to – I wanted to go down, but I couldn't because I'm recuperating from the flu. So I was watching my Facebook feed all day as I was watching the TV. Do you think it came down to party lines? The pro-gun people shun this, whereas the anti-gun people, or however you want to phrase it, embraced it. And if it did come down to party lines, what do you see happening, Lynn?
Well, I'm not 100% sure this is a party line issue, though clearly Democrats are more likely to lead the way on gun violence. Obviously, all of the politicians who spoke today were Democrats, all of them. There was not a single Republican there. But then again, the city of Albany is a very Democratic city, fortunately. But I think what's going to happen is that people are really angry about this issue. They don't want to send their children to school and have them shot. So I think that in come November, that there's going to be a lot of change in terms of by party line. I think that hopefully the Democrats will win in Congress, because then they could actually make meaningful gun violence reform, gun control reform. And that's what people were asking for today. They aren't asking to ban all guns. They're asking for meaningful gun control. And one of the things that one of the speakers talked about is, and it was Phil Steck, Assemblyman Steck, is that he said that during the 20s that people were being killed with machine guns. And FDR proposed legislation to ban machine guns. And now people don't die of machine guns. We have these other things called assault rifles, but those are different from machine guns. And so we need to take Franklin Roosevelt's lead, follow his lead in terms of banning these assault weapons. Someone else also gave the statistics of how many people were injured in Las Vegas. It's something like 800 people were injured, 58 people were killed, and all of that happened within 10 minutes. By one person. Nobody needs to have that kind of firepower.
Jason?
I'm not sure I can even add to that. you know, but, well, I can. I agree that it is definitely not going to be a party line issue at some point. As much as I think we want to be Republicans or Democrats or others, at some point, you know, knowing that there's people who go to schools and shoot children, that's just going to hit you at your core behind whatever wall of politics you're putting up. And I think that there's probably a lot of people who are pro-NRA having a lot of inner turmoil to defend what they've defended for gun rights, but they're not, they don't know how to deal inside with why are their children dying. And we're going to see, I hope we're going to see a lot of those, a lot of that kind of person come over and say, well, I understand you're not trying to bust in our houses and take our guns away. We're going to meet you halfway and help, you know, pass gun law reform and support all the things that will help prevent this kind of tragedy.
So,
I mean, I don't
so
know how,
do you think – go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't know how I would be able to sleep at night saying, yeah, I need to blindly stand behind the NRA and not question their stance on children being shot. You know, I think the NRA needs to come forward and make a statement that is compromising as well, to go back to their roots about gun safety, as opposed to saying, no, it's a free for all. Everybody should have a rifle, which is the impression I have today.
So, Lynn, do you think this is a turning point in American history? Do you think today was a turning point in American history? And if so, why? And if not, why not?
Oh, I think today is a big turning point to have that many people show up. Now, we're just talking Albany right now. That's huge rally, thousands and thousands of people. Maybe 7,000, 8,000 people showed up today. That's a lot of people for the city of Albany. And I haven't seen the figures yet for how many people came out in Washington, D.C. and New York City, but I bet it's tens of thousands of people came out in those cities. And it's all over the country. These protests have been all over the country. And this is not going to stop. And I think that this movement has started, and it's not going to stop until we get meaningful gun control reform.
I saw on my Facebook feed that in the New York City march, Paul McCartney marched in memory of his friend John Lennon.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I mean, John Lennon might still be alive if that idiot hadn't had a gun. You're
right.
Right.
Jason,
yeah,
I
saw the same thing.
How do you feel about
that? Yeah, I mean, we
don't. Jason?
I'm sorry, can you repeat what I'm...
Do you think today is a turning point in American history?
Absolutely. As I said already, 20 years from now, we are going to be reading about this in history books, in classrooms. This is the next generation of protests and next generation of setting the tone for what we want American culture to be.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. What do we want American culture to be? Do we want it to be a culture of guns and everyone can have their own armory? Or do we want to be a culture of peace where, you know, we don't have these military grade weapons in regular people's hands, which we don't need? You know, no one needs an assault rifle in their closet.
I believe one of the statistics that was stated from the podium is, you know, we're a nation that has 4 to 5% of the world's population, but we have, I think it was 31% of the world's deaths by this kind of shooting. And that's just
right.
not even close to proportional.
Yes, yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. That was mentioned today. Yes, that is correct.
So, Lynn, what was the biggest takeaway from today that left you absolutely riveted?
Oh, I think that what really inspired me was that this movement is led by young, very smart people. And I think that change is going to happen, and it's going to happen really soon. And I feel the current administration, I think, has taken the country in the wrong direction. I think that it's that all of the current president's policies are just horrible. But this movement, this student-led movement, I think is hope for the future, and I think it's going to happen pretty fast. And I also think that these students will, as Jason said, that, you know, we predict that they will become in politics and that they will lead and that we will have a more peaceful and more generous country. And I'm very hopeful. I think that's the big takeaway for me.
How about you, Jason?
Exactly the same. As you know, Cynthia, but I don't know if the audience recalled, I accidentally ran for president because I was fed up with what I was hearing on all sides, actually. And part of the learning process I found is how many people had been afraid to take a first step to speak up, who, you know, got in my corner and were happy that I was taking a first step to speak up. Now, looking at what's gone on today with Parkland students coming together, not one person standing to speak up, but pretty much their entire school district standing up, and now gathering hundreds of thousands of people who are standing up with them. I'm seeing that even if people are afraid to take the first step, enough people have taken that first step, this thing has real momentum. And that's what's going to change our politics and our culture in this nation, is when people really stand up and build a community. And Parkland seems to – the Parkland students have built a community. So even if there's not – even if the average person's afraid to just stand up on their own – they no longer need to do that. They are surrounded by people that will, you know, people will finally speak their mind on these issues. People will finally show up at more rallies, and they'll definitely show up at the ballot box. And that's the most profound thing for me, is seeing how many people are, I think it was Assemblywoman Patricia Faye said, you need to show up, stand up, and I wish I remember the third part of it. And speak up. So it's show up, stand up, speak up. And we mm-hmm. need to see more people doing that.
Right. So I'm sure that this is a conversation that will continue, and I hope, you know, in the direction against, you know, less violence in this society. So you have been listening to my friends Lynn Jackson and Jason Mutford. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. And if you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Lynn and Jason, thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.